The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We are going to talk about the rules of Hajj, in fact, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'iri, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'iri, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad Hossein, in this program, and Sheikh Javid, as always, our guest speaker in the studio. Sheikh Javid, you know, we are talking about the jurisprudential rules of Hajj, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Let me ask you this question, which is very important, in fact. What are the prohibitions of ihram? What are the things that, in fact, that a pilgrim should be wise of, you know, or about, or conscious of when it comes to ihram? What are the things that he's not, you know, allowed to do, or she's not allowed to do?
That's a very important question, and also, and perhaps it could be the most important question related to
Hajj.
Mm. Of course, if I am to answer this question, I need to go into detail because there are many, many things that are forbidden for a person who is wearing the ihram of Hajj,
mm-hmm.
and who is actually prepared already to perform the Hajj. There are many things that a pilgrim must not do. The first thing which is not permissible to do is hunting. Of course, hunting this time around is not possible because there's no deer or anything like that to be hunted.
Okay? Yeah, of course.
So it is out of question. Maybe.
In the past, people used to do that, but now people are not hunters.
Yeah, you're right. If a person is wearing the ihram and he goes to Arafat or maybe to Muzdalifah, and if there is an animal to be hunted, so he must be very much wary of and must not hunt. This mm-hmm. is the first one.
Yes.
And then we have the second one, sexual intercourse. Physical intimacy is forbidden. It's not permissible for a person who is in this state of ihram, whether he is performing Umrah or whether he is performing Hajj Tamattu, to engage in any sexual activity. And it does not make any difference whether a person is willing to perform, engage in sexual activity with his own wife or maybe with someone else, with another woman, okay? And both of these practices are forbidden.
Right.
And then kissing a woman. Kissing is not permissible. It will make kafara or penalty liable. He will be liable.
Doesn't it render the Hajj void?
No, it doesn't. You know,
if it's just does have an atonement attached.
There is a kafara because you're not supposed to do the Hajj all over again.
Right.
You will have to give a kafara. And of course, in most cases, in all of these cases, a person has to slaughter a sheep. Okay?
For each mistake or error
that he commits. And these prohibitions, if he happens to commit one of these prohibited acts, he will have to slaughter a sheep as a penalty.
I see.
So number two was sexual intercourse, and number three is kissing a woman, and then touching a woman is also not permissible. Okay, if you are, for example, accompanied by your wife, or you are accompanying your wife and you are together, if you want to touch her without lustful intention, there's no problem. For example, you can be together in the same tent or the same room, and if you happen to touch her without lustful intention, there's no objection to you. But if you touch her with lustful intention and you are wearing the ihram, it is forbidden, and you cannot do it. So then we have number five, looking at a woman and flirting with her. It's not permissible to look at a woman with lustful intention as long as you're wearing the, even if you are not wearing ihram, and if you are not performing Hajj, it's not permissible to flirt with a non-mahram woman and to actually look at a woman with lustful intention.
All right.
But the consequence of doing so, for a pilgrim is a penalty. That is the
atonement. The
atonement, yeah.
I see. Okay, let's take a short break, Sheikh Tawheed, if you agree, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawheed, our guest speaker. We are talking about the Hajj jurisprudential rules according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. Sheikh Tawheed, we are talking about, or you are, shedding some light on the prohibitions of ihram. Would you please continue that?
Yeah. Number one, as I said, hunting. Number two, sexual intercourse. And number three, kissing a woman. Number four, touching a woman. Five, looking at a woman and flirting with her. And then six, masturbation. Masturbation is haram regardless of whether you are performing Hajj or you're not performing Hajj. It is absolutely forbidden. God forbid if a person commits masturbation whilst he is wearing ihram, he should atone for it.
Right.
And number seven is reciting nikah. Okay. You are wearing ihram, you cannot recite nikah. You cannot, solemnize the marriage contract.
I see.
Whether you want to do it for yourself or you want to do it for someone
else.
For a third party, it is not permissible to solemnize it or to recite the marriage contract.
I see.
And then number eight is use of scent or perfume. It is not permissible to wear perfume, and it's not permissible to use anything which is fragrant. Like, for example, if you want to use soap and that soap has unnatural fragrance, it's not permissible to use it.
I see.
And you cannot use something which, for example, any kind of vegetable or something that has fragrant, you cannot use it. And and you should make you sure that you avoid things which are fragrant.
I see.
In the limelight.
Through its agencies, the U.S. government regularly plants fake news and false information. Therefore, social media hiring individuals straight from the FBI, CIA, NATO, and other groups to work on regulating disinformation is a fundamentally flawed practice. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Alan McLeod, journalist. This article is published under the heading, The Federal Bureau of Tweets. Twitter is hiring an alarming number of FBI agents. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. Some might ask, what is the problem with Twitter actively recruiting from the FBI, CIA, and other three-letter agencies? They, after all, are experts in studying online disinformation and propaganda. What is optical? If a Russian-owned social media app's trust, security, and content moderation was run by former KGB or FSB agents and still insisted it was a politically neutral platform, the entire world would laugh. But apart from this, the huge influx of security state personnel into Twitter's decision-making ranks means that the company will start to view every problem in the same manner as the U.S. government does and act accordingly. In terms of their outlooks on the world and on the question of misinformation and internet security, you couldn't get a better field of professionals who are almost inherently going to be more in tune with the government's perspective. Thus, when policing the platform for disinformation and influence campaigns, the former FBI and CIA agents and Atlantic Council fellows only ever seem to find them emanating from enemy states and never from the U.S. regime itself. Twitter has mirrored U.S. hostility towards states like Russia, China, and Cuba, attempting to suppress the reach and influence of their state media by adding warning messages to the tweets of journalists and accounts affiliated with those governments. In a rather bizarre adamant, it explained that it would not be doing the same to state-affiliated media or personalities from other countries, least of all the U.S. state-financed media organizations with editorial independence, like NPR, for example, are not defined as a state-affiliated media for the purposes of this policy, it wrote. Perhaps most notable, however, was Twitter's announcement last year that it was deleting dozens of accounts for the new violation of undermining faith in the NATO alliance. The statement was widely ridiculed online by users, but few noted that the decision was based upon a partnership with the Stanford Internet Observatory, a counter-disinformation think tank filled with former spooks and state officials and headed by an individual who is on the advisory board of NATO's Collective Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. That Twitter is working so closely with organizations that are clearly intelligence industry catspaws should concern all users. While some might be alarmed that Twitter is cultivating such an intimate relationship with the FBI and other groups belonging to the secret state, it is perhaps unfair to single it out, as many social media platforms are doing the same. Facebook, for example, has entered into formal partnership with the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensics Research Lab, whereby the latter holds significant influence over 2.9 billion users' news feeds, helping to decide what content to promote and what content to suppress. The NATO cutout organization now serves as Facebook's eyes and ears, according to a Facebook press release. Anti-war and anti-establishment voices across the world have reported massive drops in traffic on the platform. The social media giant also hired former NATO press secretary Ben Nemo to be its head of intelligence. Nemo subsequently used his power to attempt to swing the election in Nicaragua away from the leftist Sandinista party and towards the far-right pro-US candidate, deleting hundreds of left-wing voices in the week of the election, claiming they were engaging in inauthentic behavior. When these individuals, including some well-known personalities, poured onto Twitter, recording video messages proving they were not bots, Twitter deleted those accounts too, in what one commentator called a Silicon Valley double tap strike. An April Mint Press study revealed how TikTok too has been filling its organization with alumni of the Atlantic Council, NATO, the CIA, and the State Department. As with Twitter, these new TikTok employees largely work in highly politically sensitive fields such as trust, safety, security, and content moderation, meaning these state operatives hold influence over the direction of the company and what content is promoted and what is demoted. In corporate media, too, we have seen a widespread infiltration of former security officials into the upper echelons of news organizations. So normalized is the penetration of the national security state into the media that is supposed to be holding it into account that few reacted in 2015 when Dawn Eskenazi left her job as National Intelligence Manager for the Western Hemisphere at the Director of National Intelligence to become the Global Business Director of international news conglomerate Thomson Reuters. Eskenazi, a 33-year CIA veteran who had worked her way up to become a director in the organization, was open about what her role was. In a blog post on the Reuters website, she wrote that she was there to meet the desperate needs of the U.S. government, a statement that is at odds with even the most basic journalistic concepts of impartiality and holding the powerful to account. Meanwhile, cable news outlets routinely employ a wide range of former agents and mandarins as trusted personalities and experts. These include former CIA directors John Brennan and Michael Hayden, ex-director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and former Homeland Security Advisor Francis Townsend. And news for so many Americans comes delivered through ex-CIA interns like Anderson Cooper, CIA applicants like Tucker Carlson, or by Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of a powerful National Security Advisor. The FBI has its own former agents on TV as well, with talking heads such as James Gagliano, Asha Rakpa, and Frank Figoluski becoming household names. In short, then, the national security state once used to infiltrate the media. Today, however, the national security state is the media. Social media holds enormous influence in today's society. While this article is not alleging that anyone mentioned is a bad actor or does not genuinely care about the spread of disinformation, it is highlighting a glaring conflict of interest. Agencies, the U.S. government regularly plants fake news and false information. Therefore, social media hiring individuals straight from the FBI, CIA, NATO, and other groups to work on regulating disinformation is a fundamentally flawed practice. One of media's primary functions is to serve as a fourth estate, a force that works to hold the government and its agencies to account. Yet instead of doing that, increasingly it is collaborating with them. Such are these increasing interlocking connections that it is becoming increasingly difficult to see where big government ends and big media begins.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned. Allah in the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Waqi'ah, states, "This is indeed a noble Quran in a guarded book. No one touches it except the pure ones, gradually sent down from the Lord of all the worlds." What? Do you take lightly this discourse? These verses of Surah Al-Waqi'ah shows the importance of the content of Quran, to which we must not be neglectful. Now, the word mudhinun in verse 81 of this surah comes from the root duhn, which means oil. It means that we people take the Holy Quran lightly and are inattentive towards its content. In other words, the Quran invites people to concentrate more on the theme and content of this great book, since this is a book of guidance, and it includes various types of advice for the people. Thus, we must not be like oil towards the Quran, which metaphorically means that we must not be weak or act lightly towards it. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: يوم المظلوم على الظالم أشد من يوم الظالم على المظلوم.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said, "The day of the oppressed over the oppressor will be severer than the day of the oppressor over the oppressed."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, in the beautiful and universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that Imam Ali was not only a wealthy person, but he was also very knowledgeable. Now, what is interesting is that despite the great wealth that Imam Ali alayhi salam had, we always hear about his patched clothes, his worn out and broken sandals, or we see how the situation at home wasn't exactly luxurious when it comes to financial matters. But as we said in the initial part of the program, Imam Ali alayhi salam was actually quite wealthy. The missing piece of this puzzle is that Imam Ali gave away his wealth on the path of Allah for the sake of Allah. And so this is why we find that Imam Ali had patches upon his clothes and he had sandals which were torn. Of course, it is very famous that Imam Ali alayhi salam bought two shirts, and he gave the better of the two shirts to his servant, Qambar, and he himself took the shirt which had less value. With keeping all this in mind, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Knowledge is better than wealth, for knowledge guards you, while you have to guard your wealth. And wealth decreases by spending, while knowledge multiplies by spending." Here, dear friends, Imam Ali tells us two ways in which knowledge is much better than wealth. First off, knowledge guards you, protects you, your personality, your persona, who you represent, who you are. Knowledge guards it. But on the other hand, you have to constantly be cautious of your wealth, and you have to constantly guard your wealth, and you have to constantly be worried and preoccupied about your wealth. And the second way in which knowledge is better than wealth, wealth decreases as you spend it. The more you spend it, the faster you spend it, the faster wealth decreases.
But knowledge, on the other hand, multiplies by spending. Now, you might ask, how exactly does one spend knowledge? Well, first and foremost, you act upon the knowledge that you have acquired. This is the first kind of spending. And the second kind of spending is that you teach the knowledge that you have acquired to others around you. So again, knowledge is truly better than wealth. A beautiful and comprehensive lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRive English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاجعل نفسي مطمئنة بقدرك راضية بقضائك.
O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. He was born inside the place that billions face in prayer. He was martyred in one of the best places of prayer whilst performing prayer. He gave charity in prayer and was praised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, loved his salah. How can he not, when he was the closest human being and the best student of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam? How best then to honor the man born inside the Kaaba and martyred in Masjid al-Kufa, who dedicated his life for Tawheed and the oneness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, than to learn from his prayers? Here are lessons that we can learn from the salah of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Number 4, the physical respect. If a human being is in their salah, their body, clothes, and everything around them will be glorifying God. Imam Ali alayhi salam is reported to have said, that means what we wear in prayer should be suitable, clean, as well as our body should be nicely fragranced.
Number 5, seeking that awe of Allah. Sometimes people are distracted during salah by what's around them, or their own bodies, or in fact, their clothes. Indeed, Imam Ali alayhi salam is reported to have said, "Don't play with your beard or anything else that distracts you during prayer. Try to have khushu', which is humility and awe of God, in your heart so that the limbs will be humble too." In another instance, Imam Ali alayhi salam warns of praying whilst tired or sleepy. He states, "If you're praying and your eyes are sleepy, stop the prayer and go to sleep. For if you actually continue, you don't know whether you're praying for yourself or against yourself." Number 6, the unnecessary delay. Quoting an ayah from the Holy Quran, chapter 74, verses 42 and 43, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us how some of the inhabitants of hell are asked why they're being punished, actually answer, "We were not of those who prayed." Imam Ali alayhi salam strongly encourages the respecting of the prayer by performing it at its time and not unnecessarily delaying it or in fact missing it. In another narration, he states, "It has been prescribed by the Almighty at these times for a specific reason, so don't neglect it." Number 7, understanding the actions.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The UN Human Rights Office agrees that the veteran Palestinian journalist was killed by Israeli fire last month. The probe finds that Abu Akleh and her colleague were targeted by seemingly well-aimed bullets as they covered a military raid in the occupied West Bank.
All the information we have gathered, including official documentation from the Israeli military and the Palestinian Attorney General, is consistent with the finding that the shots that killed Abu Akleh and injured her colleague came from Israeli security forces and not from indiscriminate firing by armed Palestinians, as was initially claimed by the Israeli authorities.
So far, several media organizations have conducted their own investigations into the incident and all have come to the same conclusion. Multiple witnesses also agreed with the probe, stating that Israeli forces shot the veteran Palestinian reporter. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera and its host country Qatar pointed the fingers at Israel from the outset. The UN has also confirmed that Abu Akleh was wearing a blue flak jacket marked with the word press when being shot by Israeli troops, exposing the gruesome nature of the daylight murder and suggesting that they were deliberately targeted.
As long as the United States and its allies continue to not only embrace this position, but to promote this position using every tactic at their disposal, including threats, the more that has been the case, the more the occupation is quite happy to resort to war crimes bordering on what one could also say are crimes against humanity, albeit in a very calculated move, drawn out over a period of decades, as is the case with ethnic cleansing, which if it happened over a shorter period of time, would fit very nicely with the definition of a genocide.
The killing of yet another journalist is, however, in line with the pattern of Israeli violence against reporters and other members of the media. The Palestinian Ministry of Information says at least 45 journalists have been killed by Israeli forces since 2000. Israeli brutality against Palestinians and journalists has been a topic of discussion for many years now. The regime has, however, never accepted blame for its wrongdoing and in nearly all cases baselessly shifted the blame on Palestinians, and the case of Abu Akleh is no exception. Following the UN's report, the Israeli regime insisted that the fatal shooting of Abu Akleh was unintentional, pointing out at the same time that it had not received access to critical evidence that might determine whether she was killed by an Israeli soldier or a Palestinian gunman. Israel's military also says Palestinian authorities should hand over the bullet that killed Shireen. The demand has, however, been met by widespread criticism, with Palestinians saying the regime should hand over the gun which is believed to have killed the journalist, as Israel can't be trusted of conducting a fair investigation of itself. The murder of Abu Akleh, which sparked global outrage, only adds to Israel's long list of atrocities against Palestinians. But that fury has yet to translate into any concrete measure, particularly by international bodies such as the UN Security Council. So far, several international organizations have provided evidence of Israel's brutality against Palestinians. UN resolutions have also been passed against Israel for its occupation and blockades of the coastal enclave. Yet, no one, including the UNSC, has used any of its tools to ensure resolutions related to ending the Israeli siege imposed on Gaza have been implemented.
The complete lack of accountability only encourages, as we have seen, more war crimes by the occupation. And the unfortunate that the position long taken by the number one sponsor of the occupation, the United States of America, is that Palestinians and Israelis should resolve their differences through negotiation, and in both instances should be prevented from invoking international law and the institutions which administer it in order to impose a solution in keeping with their respective legal obligations in the so-called rules-based international order. And that, of course, is really quite absurd.
Instead, many of the UNSC member states have doubled their support for Israel, despite its blockade and bombardment of Gaza and murdering dozens of innocent women and children. Some even increased their support for the regime and obliged neighboring countries to forge ties with it. And in absence of action, there is no reason to expect Israeli violence against the Palestinians, whether a journalist or not, whether well-known or not, will end anytime soon.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says the European Union and NATO are gathering a coalition for war with Moscow. This after the EU unanimously granted candidacy status to Ukraine and Moldova. Lavrov drew parallels between current-day events and those of the first half of the 20th century when Germany was preparing an attack on the Soviet Union.
When the Second World War was about to start, Hitler gathered most of the European countries under his banners. Now the EU and NATO are also gathering the same modern coalition for the fight, and by and large for war with the Russian Federation. We will look at this very carefully.
Lavrov's remarks came after the EU leaders stepped up rhetoric against Russia.
EU's decision strengthens Ukraine and Moldova in the face of Russian aggression.
A confrontation between Moscow and NATO's nuclear-armed members would have catastrophic consequences for Europe. After all, Europe would be the immediate theater of such a war.
In terms of the possibilities of war, NATO fighting a war with Russia, I don't think they are very good. First of all, because the United States will not suffer as a result of this war. The Europeans will suffer. The Europeans, if they start down this path, they will unleash a nuclear war, in which case their entire, all of the NATO countries will be destroyed, all of the NATO bases. It will be a catastrophe for these people. And I think the leaders of the three major countries, Germany, France, and Italy, I think they understand this. And I think that's why they have been going to Kiev to have discussions with President Zelensky. They know that the people, this is not in their interest.
Candidate status is only the first step on the path to EU membership, which can take decades. But putting the EU action in the context of the current state of affairs, we can see that the rising escalation might quickly lead to catastrophic consequences. Tensions are also increasing between the EU and Russia over the growing Kaliningrad crisis. This after Lithuania began enforcing the EU sanctions and restricted the transit of goods to Kaliningrad. Moscow says the move amounts to a blockade of its exclave and has warned of serious consequences.
As for retaliatory measures and what they will be like, will they be exclusively in the diplomatic dimension? The answer is no. They will not be in the diplomatic dimension. They will be practical.
A move by Russia on Lithuania would clearly trigger NATO's Article 5 mutual defense provision, immediately pulling in all the alliance's members to a potential nuclear war with Russia. But how far can the Europeans really push for such an escalatory path with Russia, especially at a time when they are experiencing an energy crisis?
If you're asking me personally, I personally think that the main reason for the war in the Ukraine was to block the alliance between Germany and Russia. And the symbol of that alliance was the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which never got opened. As a result, now Germany is in a critical crisis because Russia has control of its energy. Russia just turned, dialed down 40% of its energy. Germany cannot survive under these conditions. It is not in Germany's interest to commit suicide for the United States of America.
On Thursday, Ukraine said it had received U.S. supplies of high-mobility artillery rocket systems, a powerful long-range weapon system that Kiev hopes can help turn the tide on Russia's military offensive. Russian officials have repeatedly warned that the U.S. decision to supply Ukraine with advanced rocket systems could exacerbate the conflict.
Iran has released fresh details about the covert and planned operations of agents of Israeli spy agency in Iran. Officials say the three agents detained back in April were planning to assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists. Officials say the agents were arrested following a complicated intelligence operation that lasted 8 months. Judiciary officials say some members of the cell have been arrested in Iran's southeastern Sistan and Balochistan province, while other members and operatives have been detained outside the province by Iran's intelligence forces. Officials say the case is under preliminary investigation and that an indictment would be filed and sent to court soon. This is not the first time Iran busts Mossad-linked terrorists. In July last year, Iran's intelligence ministry arrested a network of agents with the Israeli Mossad spy agency at the western borders, confiscating a large cache of weapons and ammunition that they were planning to use to provoke riots and terror inside the country.
Well, of course there should be, and I don't think anyone is really going to seriously say it's unthinkable that Israel would try to assassinate Iranian figures, whether in science or politics. They've got a demonstrable propensity to do so, and they boast about it.
The arrests come amid open threats by Israeli officials against Iranian nuclear scientists and facilities. The regime is notorious for its sabotage activities and assassinations in Iran.
And the reason behind its stepped-up